You thought Millard, Kyprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. This is the number one noon hour hockey show in Canada. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, here we go. Once again, around the table, Doug McLean returning from Florida. Scott Morrison back because you seem to live here these days. And I'm Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard. Welcome to HC at Noon across the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks stateside on the NHL Network. We'll get to last night in a couple of moments. I want to let you know Chuck Fletcher will be stopping by, Minnesota Wild general manager. They're all tucked away and will face off against the Chicago Blackhawks. But about last night, let's begin with the elimination game. It was game seven. The last time we saw the Islanders and the Capitals, we all stayed up till about 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern until Pat LaFontaine put everybody out of their misery. Last night, it was Yevgeny Kuznetsov with the big goal in the third period. Washington advance. The Islanders go home, and that is the end of Nassau Coliseum. Who wants first whack at this pinata?
I think about that game, that four overtimes, a lot, because I remember watching it in St. Louis. And a week, and I remember feeling really bad for Brian Murray watching him walk across the ice, knowing I was going in the next week for a job interview and how cranky they'd all be when I was in there meeting for a job interview. And I ended up getting the job there. But I remember watching that game as vividly, and then to see the Nassau Coliseum, I mean, the history. But you know what? It was a funny game. Like, how do you not get shots on goal?
The scoreboard was kind. Let's be honest. The scoreboard was really kind. That was a dominant performance by the Caps.
See, I don't get that. I remember in Florida, and I told you this story before when I was coaching there. I remember one night a team outshot us 12-0. And I met the shot guy between periods. I said, you get that button, that finger of yours working. I don't care if we have any shots. You get some shots up on that damn board.
Anything that goes near the net is a shot on goal.
And then within a couple of minutes, it was 12-7, the shots. But you can't do that on the road. The Islanders,
no, I know.
But anyway, for them not to get any shots on goal and three forwards with shots, and Tavares is as great as he's been, and what a guy, what he's been for this franchise.
Amazing.
Frustrating night for them.
But Tavares, Scott, you were talking about this last night. Not only no shots on goal, but no shot attempts even. That is how
close. In 21 minutes of ice time.
That's how close Washington played Tavares.
But you know what? We talked about it. Is maybe the Barry Trotz influence was on display. When you only give up 11 shots, they spent more time in the Islander zone. Their penalty kill was perfect in the series, 14 for 14. That's another amazing statistic. And that there were only 14 penalties in seven games speaks to the discipline of the Caps as well.
Listen to Brooks Orpik do an interview after the game with NBC on the bench. And, he made some great points about their team and the structure of their group and how they still have a ways to go, but how Barry sold them when he went in. When he went in to consider signing with them, Barry Trotz had sold them what we're going to become here. He said, we're not there yet, but we're making great strides. And I look at the start of the series, and I said the night we did the game, I said, I want to watch if Ovechkin resorts to individual versus team. I want to see that as the series goes on. He didn't resort, and I said, I, for the life of me, don't believe Barry Trotz would let that happen, that anybody would become bigger than the team. He started off, and he stumbled Ovi. Mm-hmm. And
but
you know what?
He was getting his chances, though.
But I'll tell you
he was getting his shots.
It didn't become an issue. He played hard. It was still team. I give Ovi credit for that. And I give Barry Trotz credit. And the whole group. I mean, Brian McClellan deserves credit. I mean, Holtby, look, they've had a good year. And it started with adding some defensemen and allowing other guys to drop in the lineup. And Ovechkin becoming not bigger than the team, but is having his best year. some great things there.
Well, he goes from a minus 35 to a plus player. And even though he had an assist last night, but even when he wasn't contributing offensively, he wasn't a liability. And like last night, he was a physical presence. Like they were a punishing team physically last night.
We were in Washington for the Outdoor Classic, and I remember watching Ovi in that game when he won and what it meant to him to win that game and for the Caps to win that game in front of 50,000 people. The emotion he showed during that game, post that game, he's a man on a mission this year, and he deserves full marks because a lot of people have been tough on this guy, including myself. Few other people on the panel that don't work, they sit out in that big stage there on Saturday nights. A lot of them chirped him pretty good at the start of the season. One of them between the benches now on a regular basis. But anyhow, he deserves some big-time credit.
Yeah.
He does.
You know, and we should also talk about the play. We're going to get to Kuznetsov here in a second, Scott. But also, this is the year that I think everyone started to pay attention to Nick Backstrom. No. This is the year that everyone started, you know what? This guy from the 2006 draft, who's probably the best from that class, well, him and Jonathan Toews,
yeah,
with all due respect, Claude Giroux in that mix as well. This has been the year where I really think he cemented himself as a legitimate A-lister in the NHL and someone who should probably get sulky consideration somewhere down the road. But 19's been fantastic.
No, he has. And putting up points, and to your point, being good at both ends of the rink, being responsible at both ends. And, yeah, I think you look at him as being among the elite players right now.
Kuznetsov.
Well, what a goal he scored last night. Oh, and a great
patience.
Oh, a great rookie season. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he had a great game. Was it game five? I think it was.
Five,
he had
a
couple of goals and a point. And then the winning goal last night, and you mentioned it, Doug, the patience of rolling off the boards, hanging onto the puck, and then finally waiting for Halak to commit, and then a brilliant shot on top of it to roof it.
It was Backstrom-like.
And that's their 1-2 down the middle now.
I remember talking to George McPhee about this guy, and George saying, Doug, wait till you see this guy that we drafted. And he was giving his scouts full marks, but, you know, it was a big pick for them. But going back to Backstrom for a minute, and another George McPhee draft pick, and it was a great draft. And, yeah, I'm taking Toews ahead of him, but he's right there as the next guy. And remember watching him in the World Junior that year? Oh, my God, was he good. Yeah. You know, and he's played with Ovechkin. So that's a real positive, but that's also not an easy job. Mm-hmm. When you're that good a player, you're that talented a guy, and he always wants to find Ovechkin because he knows he's a trigger guy. But it's not always – it's great, but it's also got its drawbacks. So I think Backstrom has become, like you said,
and
one of the MVPs of the league.
And to mind his own knitting defensively as well. I mean, he is a real good two-way center.
And he's a guy that took it on himself. I mean, the rumblings, you know, he wasn't in great shape. And He wasn't,
by his own admission, too.
You're right. And apparently in the post-game meetings last year, he said, hey, I got to be a lot better, and I'm going to, you know, he went on a...
Doug, he was the only one in Washington that said that.
Right.
That was it. We talked to Brian McClellan at the Winter Classic.
Yeah.
And he said, listen, the one guy that said, I need to be better.
Yeah.
The one guy was Backstrom.
And look, Niskanen and Orpik have been a plus. Carlson's matured into a real good player. Alzner's become a good player. Yep. Remember Green, how...
And Holtby, how about him?
Oh, yeah,
the workload.
But remember Green at playoff time, the pressure on this guy because he was a 1-2 guy there, and they'd go after him, and he was always hurt, and his shoulder problem, and he was... All of a sudden, he slides down to the 5-6 spot, and number five, power play, he's had a real good year. So it allowed Carlson to slide, you know, Carlson and, you know, Orpik become a real good pair, and Niskanen and Alzner, I mean... It's amazing what it did to their defense group, those two guys.
Jason Chimera, when we talk about, and Joel Ward, I mean, whenever you have a series like this, you talk about foot soldiers. Probably when we look back at it, the turning point was the Tom Wilson hit on Lubomir Vyshnovsky, which was probably the final nail in that coffin for that blue line, withstanding the loss of Hamonic. The Han goes out, and then Vyshnovsky.
Well, credit to the Islanders for battling the way they did, despite having the holes they had on the injuries they had at the back end. You know, Letty and Boychuk stepping up, playing 28, 29 minutes.
Yeah.
That they were able to keep it that close for that long was...
You know what? I love watching. I love watching Jason Chimera, and I had him for probably 5 years in Columbus. You know, and he was a good person,
solid player.
We lived in the same condo complex at the end. Even after I got fired, he was a neighbor. But this is a guy that had a hard time finding his way in the NHL. Let's not forget, he started in Edmonton, had a hard time finding his way,
yep.
Ends up in Phoenix. We get him in a Jeff Sanderson trade, and he came in, and all he did is score 18 to 20 goals and battle. And then they trade him to Washington, and he's been a real – all of a sudden he's gone from the second line to the third line to the fourth line. All of a sudden this line becomes one of their most important lines.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he deserves a lot of credit. And I watch him, and I'm thinking, I'm really damn proud of him.
Allender's out, and that means the end of Nassau Coliseum. When you think back to that barn as they move to Brooklyn next season, what's going to come to your mind right away, ScoMo?
Well, one of the great thrills as a young reporter was going in there and being able to sit down and interview Al Arbour in his office, the legend. I mean, that was a memory that you never forget. And, it's time for that building. But boy, when it was full, it could really rock. And when they had good teams, that place was a fun building to be in because it was so tight.
Were you there
tight.
For Tinelli to Nystrom?
No.
Okay.
To mention the bar at the Marriott that you media guys used to love, too. We couldn't hang out there.
Well,
but
it was
you
the
guys...
only place on the island.
You know what? As a young coach in the NHL, as an assistant coach, I think you hit the nail on the head, to walk into that building – and you'd run into Bill Torrey at the morning skates, Al Arbour, and then I spent a fair amount of time with Bill Torrey after, and to hear him talk about those teams and those days. And then I got to spend work with Dennis Potvin for a number of years in Florida, and to hear him talk about those teams and those guys. Then I was lucky enough to have Billy Smith as my goalie coach in Florida. And I remember when, the goalies had let in a bad goal, and I'd say, "Billy, what's going on?" He'd say, "I'm not the damn goalie. I didn't let the puck in. Yell at Van Beesbrock." But Billy was great. And you know what? That was quite a group they had there, you know? And it's really interesting. Sit down someday and read Brian Trottier's resume. He sent me a resume to be a coach in Columbus. And I sat there, and I read his resume, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. This is an unbelievable resume. What that guy accomplished in his playing career. Unbelievable. So they were an amazing group. They really were.
Amazing team. The end of that rink, that really is the ending of an era. The Joe's the next one to go, and then all the rinks will be up to date and modern.
Cookie cutter.
And then that's just it.
No, then
no
some
personality.
New ones are outdated now. Some new ones are outdated.
Yeah, what's next? By the way, San Jose looking to renew their lease with SAP in San Jose. But let's get to the other game last night, and we'll start off with a headline issue before we get to the final score. Nick Cronwall has a meeting with the Department of Player Safety. The official reason is charging/illegal check to the head. This is for the hit on Nikita Kucherov yesterday. We've all seen the video, whether you've seen it on television or online. We've seen Cronwall make hits similar to this before. Is this one different? I mean, he's never been dinged. He's never been sat down. He's always walked that line. But does this one seem different, Scotty?
Well, we talked about it last night in that he's had those big crunching checks with guys coming up the boards and him stepping in from the blue line. But more often than not, it's he turns his body and he hits him with the shoulder. He hits him with the side of his body, where this one... it looked like the elbow and the forearm were the point of contact with the head. And he left his feet doing it.
And the foot started up. Like, his lead foot is up before he hits Kucherov.
Yeah.
Now, was Kucherov leaning? Was his body position? So much of this is like the Zapruder film. You just go through it frame by frame, and where's the body positioning? And what point did the feet come up off the ice? But what does your gut say, Doug? Is he going to get dinged for this one? And if so, that's a game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And remind me again who owns the Detroit Red Wings?
I'm serious. If I'm Stefan Quintel, I had a restless night's sleep last night. Thinking about what to do with this one. And you're right, Scott. Typically, it's the shoulder, and he's one of the best in the business at it. The arm coming around... The forearm, it looked to me almost more of a forearm to the head, touch of elbow, but mostly forearm. The feet left the ice. I'd like to see it one more time. I want to see Kucherov. Was he leaning down? Is that a way to to get out of this? Was he leaning for some reason? Was he leaning?
So you're looking for a reason.
Quintel, I'm really looking.
And the fact that he came back in the game.
Yeah. So here's what I would do. That's why I'll never be player safety guy.
You'd fine him, wouldn't you? You'd hit him with a fine, and that would be it, and he'd play game 7.
I still haven't seen Kucherov.
I don't know.
He's pretty straight up. Head down.
You know what? I would fine him.
Okay, if that's game. Okay, if that's
why are they having a phone interview to fine him?
What a gutsy call by you.
If I'm with Tampa, I'm calling for 5 games.
If that hit is made in game number 25, what's your call?
Game or two.
Okay, it's game seven. You know Stanley Cup
I'm telling you, if that's in game 25. It's maybe 2 games.
Yeah.
Maybe. Does he have a history?
No. Does not.
Is it 1 game? So if it's 1 game in game 25, it's a fine in the playoffs.
No penalty on the play, by the way, too. I was saying.
What do you think?
Here's the part. I think it's a suspendable offense. It's a tough one. This is one of those, okay, I'm cementing my reputation. This flag is going on the moon and I'm here for Stefan Quintel, to Doug's point. But if I'm Detroit and that hit is going to happen, you want it early in the game and have Cronwall kicked out, and then Quintel can make the point, well, he's already pretty much served a game because Detroit didn't have him. Problem was, it didn't happen early in the first period. And so now you're in the spot where...
And he didn't get the boot.
There's no call on the play. And Scott, to your point, the player came back. Right? Kucherov came back to finish the game. For me, it's a one game.
Okay, so let's compare it to Subban's slash.
Compare it to Subban's slash?
Yeah, I mean, is it as equal offense?
Let's hang on to that thought for a second, because the general manager of the Minnesota Wild is Ryan.
Well, he should, as a guy that is heavily involved in meetings and these rules, he should be able to make the call for us, Chuck.
All right, very good. Chuck Fletcher, Minnesota Wild general manager. First of all, congrats on the opening round win. And Doug has a razor blade question for you, Chuck. Doug, the floor is yours.
What should he get? I mean, I say a fine for the Detroit defenseman. What do you say?
Oh, you put me on the spot.
Oh, you sit in all the meetings. You know the rules. You know better than player safety.
Yeah.
It's a fine, isn't it, Chuck?
I'm not sure. I don't think I want to get into that.
Okay, let's go to the next one. Congratulations, by the way.
We're not pulling the pin out of the grenade on that one for you, Chuck. Don't worry. First of all, congratulations on the opening round win against the St. Louis Blues. You know, so many people that we talked to before the playoffs started said, man, I really don't want to play the Minnesota Wild. This team plays hard. This team is all over you. This team has great goaltending. This team has an underrated defense. From your point of view, Chuck, this season, when did it seem to turn for your team? When did the Minnesota Wild turn into that team that I just described?
Well, that's a good question, Jeff. I mean, I thought the first month of the year we played very well. In October, we were 7-3, I think, our first 10 games, and we probably easily could have been 8-2 or 9-1. We were playing a real fast game, and we're dominating puck possession, and we were getting a lot of shots on goal. But, you know, obviously our season kind of fell apart there through December and January, and coming right out of the All-Star break, we went out west and we won a game in Edmonton late. Then we won a 1-0 game in Calgary. Then we went into Vancouver and won a game. So I think the first time in franchise history we'd ever won 3 in a row out west. It was a big moment. We won all 3 games. We played well, and that really seemed to, I think it showed to our group that we could be a pretty good team when we played the right way. And from that point on, we rolled and we had a lot of work to do just to get in, but we knew we had a pretty good team at that point.
So I don't know if you noticed, but Kiprios hasn't been on the show in a while, and part of the reason is because the day you traded for Dubnyk, he and I said on this show, imagine Chuck Fletcher walking into a struggling hockey team and saying, oh, wow, we just got Devan Dubnyk.
You're such an upbeat guy today.
So
that's every day.
So yeah. Chuck, I mean, seriously, Tuesday. Like I was sitting there thinking, are you kidding? I mean, I haven't seen Devan play in Phoenix, but I did see him play late or the year before. But that turned out to be a hell of a move by you for your team. And I mean, Chuck, it's been an amazing story.
Well, it has been. You have to give Devin a lot of credit. He, you know, last season was obviously a write-off for him. Everything that could go wrong did, and he was moved around and played for, I think, four different teams, and that's a tough year. And but, you know, he had played pretty well in Edmonton in previous years. The year before under Ralph Kruger, he had a real good year. And, you know, we played against him lots when he was in Edmonton, and he was a big guy that when he was on his game was pretty good. And obviously he was in Arizona earlier this season, and Sean Burke and Dave Tippett, and they obviously instilled a lot of confidence in him. He played well there, and when he came in, he's been outstanding for us. He's making all the saves he should, and a few highlight reel saves as well. So you know, we were fortunate to get him. The timing worked out well. There weren't a lot of goaltenders in the marketplace, and we were able to get a guy who had been a number one goalie in the league. And you know, we felt with our defensive structure, we the way we play, we think goaltenders can play and have pretty good success behind that team. So we were lucky. I don't think any of us anticipated it would go this well. But
don't tell anybody that, Chuck. Tell them you knew it all along.
It was a slam dunk. Chuck, this will be the third straight year that you meet the Hawks in the playoffs. How do you like the matchup this time around?
Well, I think this time of the year you love any matchup because it means you're still playing. And it's hard to make the playoffs. It's hard to win a round. And they're obviously a great team. They've won two Stanley Cups, I think, in the last 5 years or 6 years. So we know they're a very good team, and they've knocked us out the last 2 years. I think we're 0-6 in the United Center the last two playoff series as well. So you know, we have our work cut out for us. We have to show that we can beat a real good hockey team. But you know, it's great, again, just to be playing, to be able to play in May and be able to play a great team. And it means you're still alive, and I know we're excited for the challenge.
But do you feel you're at a better level than the last 2 years or better team?
Well, we'll find out. I mean, it's easy to say yes, but we'll have to find out. I mean, that's a heck of a hockey team, and we'll know pretty quickly after the first two games in Chicago.
Tim Murray just sent me a note and said, "Holy good God, you're gray." I think he's looking at me. Okay, Chuck, your coach drops 36 F-bombs. You had to be sitting in the stands watching that spectacle. I loved every minute of it. I thought it was great, great stuff. A week later, you get Dubnyk. But did this like, Yo has been under some extreme pressure. I imagine you've been under some extreme pressure to remove him. You stuck with him. The guy's a pretty good coach.
Yeah, he's a very good coach. We have a very good coaching staff, too. I mean, with Rick Wilson and Darryl Sador and Darby Henriksen, Andrew Burnett, Bob Mason, I mean, they're all quality people and smart people. And, you know, I think we play the right way. We play with good structure. Our young players all get better. He knows how to run a bench. And Mike's a good coach, and he's always been a good coach. And we didn't feel it was a coaching issue. So, you know, we were never close to making a move. And we really just had to find a way to win one game, Doug. We lost six in a row, and we were hammered in Pittsburgh at the tail end of that losing streak, and just got blown out in there. But we felt we had good players, and we felt we had good coaches, and we just had to find a way to win a game. And Dubnyk obviously was a big part of turning that around. He came in and we were able to win a couple games before the All-Star break, and we really took off after. But Mike's a good coach, and I think people hopefully are seeing that now. And you know, we play fast, we play hard, we're a relentless team when we're going, and a lot of that has to do with his structure and the confidence he instills in the players.
Chuck Fletcher joins us on Hockey Central at noon. Minnesota Wild general manager. They'll face off in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs against the Chicago Blackhawks. Marco Scandella, Jared Spurgeon, for my money, the most underrated pair in the NHL. What makes these two work so well together, Chuck?
Well, Spurgeon has elite hockey sense. He just has tremendous poise. He retrieves pucks as well as any defenseman in our organization. And he goes back and gets the puck. And even though he's about 175 pounds, he's fearless. And he just makes great outlet passes. And just a real smart defender. And obviously has some skill. And Marco's sort of also a smart player, but he's got the brawn. He's got the size. He's a big kid, 215 pounds, and he can skate. And they match really well together. Their strengths, and they play together for a few seasons now, so they have a lot of confidence and a lot of knowledge of each other's games, and there's this great chemistry there.
Someone who's not underrated but played real well for you in that first series, tell us about Zach Parise and what he's contributed.
Well, he's he's just such a hardworking player. I mean, he's obviously a high-skilled player, but he's got the mentality of a third or fourth line checker. I mean, he's always digging in pucks. He goes to the dirty areas. He pays a price every shift, and he just doesn't stop working. And to have one of your more skilled players have that type of work ethic, it's unbelievable. But he had two huge goals last game, and was really a big factor in that series against St. Louis. And, you know, he's playing against St. Louis is a heck of a hockey team, and they got a lot of big bodies, and Zach's out there battling away every shift. And it really, it's pretty inspirational for his teammates when you see a guy blocking shots and taking hits and going to the net every shift. And he does a great job for us.
I think I may have mentioned this to you once before, Chuck, but for what he and Ryan Suter went through with their dads and with hockey dads and guys as close as they were to those two gentlemen and former great players, it brings chills when you see Zach score like that the other night, and what it must mean to him and to Ryan and to the whole group there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And Zach was, you know, asked about his dad and after the game, and I know he had some comments about, you know, how what a big hole in his life it is for him, and how he thinks of him every day. But he's. You know, JP was such a tremendous influence on him and such a great competitor. And I watched JP play a little bit when I was a kid, but you know where Zach gets it from. He comes by it pretty honestly. And same with Ryan and Bob Suter. They were very close and talked every day. So it's been just an unbelievably tough year for those guys. But I think having some success now, I'm sure is something that they're relishing but it was a tough year. It was a real tough year for those two guys.
Just on another note, Mike Russo listens to this show every day looking for stuff to talk about on his shows when they let him on the radio out there.
Scoop Stuck.
It's hard, and he's become a go-to hockey writer. Hard to believe, isn't it, Chuck, from where he started?
Yeah. He's had a great career, Mike. He works hard.
Tell the truth, Chuck.
He's one of the harder working. I don't know where he gets all the stuff from. It's unbelievable. He's got everything. So
he's the goods.
I got to stop following him though, because I follow him on Twitter, but he does play by play of the Wild games on Twitter. I got to stop following him, but I just don't know how to not follow. Will he notice if I stop following him?
Well, he will now.
Because I can't take it. I can't take it anymore.
Now, well, that's for the out of towners that can't watch the game live. Think of the fans that can't watch the game. Listen, Chuck,
great luck. Congrats and great luck, bud.
Yeah, thank you, Doug.
Chuck Fletcher is the general manager of the Minnesota Wild. You're bang on about Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, because this in our position, you don't cheer for teams as much as selfishly a media member. You cheer for the best story. You cheer for what's going to give you the best story. And Scott, you know this going away. And as an ex-NHL executive, you know this, Doug. This has the makings, the Minnesota Wild, of the great American hockey story here.
And Chuck's a prime example. Chuck knows what those two kids or guys went through, because 100%. Chuck and his dad grew up in the game together and talked all the time. And, you know, I mean, and still I'm sure to this day, Chuck is always relying on Cliff for advice. And he should with what Cliff's accomplished in his career. So it really, when you're hockey families, it's tough on every family. It's tough on every family. But this is a different one, you know, especially at playoff time.
Well, and we talked about it the other day, too, Matt Stajan. You cheer for good stories,
totally.
Great stories, and good people.
Right. Amen to that. And on that, we'll hit our first break of the broadcast. We will come back and, we'll talk a little bit more about Detroit and Tampa. That one's headed for a Game 7, the Steve Yzerman Cup, all that when hockey. Oh, by the way, we should talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jim Rutherford had his media meeting today. We'll update on Evgeny Malkin and Patrick Hornquist. A little bit more on Nicholas Cronwall and the impending hearing with the NHL Department of Player Safety. This is Hockey Central at Noon on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks, simulcast stateside on the NHL Network. We'll be right back.
Tell your smartphone to smarten up. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. On demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Around the table, Hockey Central at noon. Doug McClain, Scott Morrison, yours truly, Jeff Merrick, in for it. Darren Millard. A couple things we should note before the broadcast goes off the air. Jim Rutherford, general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, having his media availability today. A couple of notes. Not a surprise. Evgeny Malkin playing with a sprained ankle. He did look labored around the ice. Many people remarked on that. We thought it might have been a groin injury. It's not. It's a sprained ankle. Patrick Hornquist playing with a broken rib in that series as well. Looks like Rutherford's back. Looks like Mike Johnston is back. Surprised?
I'm happy they're back. How do you fire Mike Johnston when you go into the series with what he went in with? You know, with that defense and beat up that way and with those injuries. And Jimmy, I mean, who are they going to hire?
You've already blown it up.
Like, who are they going to hire? They just did the same thing. So I give Mario and the ownership group credit that they didn't panic. And, you know, I chuckle. I read articles. I read the article about how Jimmy screwed up the salary cap. Are you kidding me? The salary cap wasn't screwed up by Jim Rutherford. It was screwed up before, and it's because they had a good team. And it's no different than L.A. and Chicago and all the other good teams
Boston
that have salary cap problems because they become good. And they got superstars. So it was such a BS comment about how he screwed up the cap because the guy was mad at him. But he signed Ehrhoff at $4 million on a one-year deal. How does that screw up your salary cap? That's one of the better deals last summer for me.
One of the more curious deals, though, that people still raise their eyebrows at is Ben Lovejoy for Simone Desprez.
Yeah, but that's fine. But what about the Hornquist deal for Neil? Hornquist and Spalling, wasn't that a fair deal? Because he saved some cap space to be able to bring Ehrhoff in. I thought that was an astute move. And I guarantee you what happened is the management group in Pittsburgh had a history with Lovejoy. They thought they needed a veteran presence with the injuries, and they moved a kid. A relative kid that they think is going to be a 4-5 guy to bring him in. That was their mindset. Yeah. Does Desprez become more than a 4-5 guy? I don't know if he does.
Could be.
He may not. He may not, but he may. You know?
What do you think, Scotty?
Well, and when you're a playoff team, you address your needs sometimes, and you're not necessarily worried about the future. You're worried about the present, but they needed help at the back end. And when you look at the bigger picture and you hear about these injuries now, and we've used this line many times, and it was Coach K used to say it all the time, that, you know, injuries are excuse and sometimes they're a reason. Yep. And they were a big reason why they were faltering.
Like, look at the Islanders. I mean, when you think about game 5, 6, and 7 for the New York Islanders, with their defense, with Hamonic out from day one, you know, Vishnovsky out and DeHaan. Come on. I didn't even know who the hell two of their defensemen were in that game yesterday.
Well, they were in the minors all year.
Right. Bridgeport.
I don't watch Bridgeport. But you know what? It's tough. It's tough this time of year. It's no different than Cronville. If Cronville's suspended, it's tough on Detroit going in with one guy out.
Yeah, that's a number
so,
one.
So, hey, I'm thrilled that Jimmy and Mike and his coaching staff are back.
And they were competitive in the series. Despite all that.
Now, here's the one Ken Hitchcock. Ken Hitchcock and
okay, let's get on. I'm glad you brought that up. Moments ago, Doug Armstrong saying he will take time to evaluate the situation before sitting down and deciding Ken Hitchcock's future in St. Louis. As a coach, you don't like to hear that.
No.
It's not a ringing endorsement.
No. I mean, I've had a little bit of a history with Ken Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what. Ken Hitchcock's not the problem with the St. Louis Blues. You go into the playoffs, everybody in hockey talked about their goaltending. They brought in Miller last year to replace these two guys. Then they go buy Miller, and they have the same two guys. Now, I understand Jake Allen's a kid, and he's young, and he's going to be a good goalie, but you're going into the playoffs with a kid as your number one goalie, and you're expected to win the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. I know what's happened with Patrick Waugh and a couple of guys in the history of the NHL, but it doesn't happen that often. So is Ken Hitchcock the problem in St. Louis? I'm sorry, but for me, it's not. And it doesn't matter to me. I don't want to see anybody get fired, but I don't think Ken Hitchcock's the problem there. I think there's other problems before it's Ken Hitchcock.
So is it goalieitis, Scotty?
Well, I think that's a big part of it. And as Doug mentioned, and we talked about off air, is that you went out and made a move last year to try and rectify the problem. or what you perceived to be a problem or something that needed some time before it got better, and then you come back with the same two this year. Maybe the expectation was that they'd grown, Elliott and Allen, and that they were better in a better place than they were a year ago, but clearly that was not the case. And I don't know how you hang that on the coach.
They brought Brodeur in. You know, and they had an injury. Elliott was injured.
That was a curious one.
And they brought Brodeur in to, and it was for depth, but it's Marty Brodeur. Like, seriously. I didn't like it at the time. And then now, what, I don't know, is he assistant GM? He's one of like four assistant GMs there now.
For now, and then he's going to be heading to New Jersey.
Doug Armstrong's done a good job. John Davidson, Doug Armstrong, they've done a good job rebuilding the St. Louis Blues. JD is gone now. Army's there. They're a pretty good hockey team. There's no reason to panic when all they need, and maybe it's Jake Allen. He may be the guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
But there's no reason to blow that team up. That's a damn good hockey team.
And they lost to
a team that's one of the best teams in the NHL the last 3 months of the season.
But we keep saying that about St. Louis. We said it when they lost against Chicago. And we said it when they lost against Los Angeles Kings.
What have we said?
They lost to better teams.
They lost
elite
because
level
of what?
Stanley Cup teams. The goaltending. And lack of scoring depth was an issue for St. Louis. It seems now with Laterra and Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz, they have that addressed. Maybe the issue is, guys, I mean, how many times you said this?
Stastny.
Maybe the best move that you make is the move you don't. Do you just say to yourself, we just need one more year of experience?
Well, they're the ones that have to judge that. If, like, I keep hearing great things about Jake Allen. What Hitchcock thinks of Jake Allen? He said this is not a piling on of Jake Allen. But unfortunately, it was tough. You know, the way you lose, your job's on the line as a coach, and you watch those goals go in. Yeah. Jake Allen, there's a very good chance, and I know Army believes this because Army told us this. He believes Jake Allen's going to be a hell of a number one goalie.
But he's not right now.
It may be time.
The challenge is.
But he's not right now. And should Hitchcock be blamed for that? In my opinion, no. If Jake comes back next year and he's a character kid and he's good, he could be a great goalie next year.
You know that marketplace. You were there. What does this marketplace want then this offseason?
Oh, they want everybody's heads. It's a tough, like, that's St. Louis Cardinal country. They're tough. They're a tough group. They were tough when I was there. And that was in the late 80s, for God's sake.
Yeah.
They're tough. They consider themselves winners in St. Louis because of the Cardinals and the history of baseball there. The Blues have not had playoff success, and they will be out for blood. So I don't know.
It's like any market. They want answers. Mm-hmm. They want a solution. But
they want a sacrifice. Let's just say it's a nice way. They want someone that they can look at and say, there's our
pinata. But you know,
get your sticks.
You've got to be patient.
Yeah.
If you're the management.
Is the easy thing to do, say, okay, Hitch, you're done, and Kirk Muller, you're the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That I guess that could be the easy thing. Like Army, when I hired Ken Hitchcock in Columbus, Doug Armstrong phoned me and talked to me till I was blue in the face as that was the guy I was supposed to hire. So they have a long history. There's good respect there between one another. Army will think this long and hard. This is not an easy decision for Doug Armstrong. And sometimes, you know what? It's not always Army's decision.
Armstrong also saying moments ago, Doug Armstrong, GM of the St. Louis Blues, getting Tarasenko signed, he's the priority for us.
Yeah, can't disagree with that.
Now, is that going to be a long-term deal?
I would
for
hope
Tarasenko?
So.
How would you handle that one?
As long as I could get him on. As long as
he
I
really
could get him
that
on.
Good.
He's
that's
that
a no-brainer.
Good.
Yeah.
And look, it changed the dynamic of their team this year. Look, let me tell you something. The Chicago Blackhawks are happy they're not playing the St. Louis Blues. I'm telling you that. I know Minnie's going to be good, and I know Minnie's going to be tough. And Minnie may, who knows who wins these series anymore. But they're damn happy they're not playing the St. Louis Blues. So, you know, it's a really tough few days for a GM, and it's really tough for coaches because you've got owners that are losing their marbles. snapping, and their friends are in their ears. It's the worst time of year for a GM when you've got these couple days.
And that's why you want as much time as possible and get everybody to calm down.
That's right. And look, Jimmy Rutherford and Mike Johnson are a prime example. Nobody think, you know, what about Letang's revival this year, the way he performed? I know he got hurt. It was devastating. Yeah. Only Matt has taken it. What about the year Fleury had?
I was just going to say, the goalie.
And some people, Jimmy Rutherford, I remember sitting with Jimmy Rutherford in June last year and saying, I love Letang and I love Fleury. They're going to rebound and be real good players, you know? So,
all right, let's conclude the broadcast in the couple of moments we have left with you with our three stars from Hockey Central. I'll kick it off with Yaroslav Halak. Even in a losing effort, this goaltender was able to keep the Islanders very much, not just in the game, but in the series when they were outplayed, outmuscled, outbullied, and outscored by the Washington Capitals, inevitably as they lose in seven. Without Yaroslav Halak, this thing is done well before seven games, Scott.
Well, in my star, we talked about him earlier, and the one guy Halak couldn't stop last night, scored the game-winning goal, is Kuznetsov, just the rookie center for the Washington Capitals, having a great season, a great series. He had a tremendous game five when he had a couple of goals in that 5-1 win, and then the game winner last night where he showed such great composure and patience in waiting out Halak and then roofing it. The nice move off the boards there, and he's settling in really nicely as the Caps' number two center.
You remember yours, Doug?
Well, since I picked Tampa to go to the Stanley Cup Finals and play Chicago in the finals with Chicago winning, I had to take a Tampa player because it was a big, big, big win. I mean, seriously. And Johnson, I mean, what can you say about this kid? 24 years of age, the speed he plays the game with, what he's done in this series, what he's done all year.
And he gets knocked around,
Doug. I mean, he is a tough little guy, boy, I'm telling you. And free agent signing. Never drafted. Yeah. Are you kidding me? And you pick up one of the better young players in the game? Seriously.
Fell into their laps.
Now, you think about the Game 4 comeback that he led for them, saved them there, and then saved them again last night.
Imagine that they just had Jones from Nashville instead of Drouin. That's going to cause a storm.
Oh, hold on. Oh, by the way, David Poile not too thrilled with the Santorelli deal now all of a sudden with Cody Franzen, saying the fact that he was a right-hand shot was problematic. For the team. We will now see.
By the way, Drouin's going to be, Drouin's going to be a real good player, isn't
great
he?
Release. Great, this guy coming down the board.
I don't care about his release. Is he going to be a great player?
I would think so. The skill set is there.
Oh.
If you look at all the skills that Jonathan Drouin has.
He scored a goal here a couple weeks ago, and it was his second game in 48 games, he scored it like he scored 30 in a row.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see Seth Jones, the step he's taken, two great young kids.
Remarkable. For the fifth time since 2009, we will see the Washington Capitals face off against the New York Rangers in the playoffs. Rangers look good, and they have that Lundqvist guy who last time I checked was all-world. What do we make of the Caps' chances against the President's Trophy winners?
I think their chances are pretty good. I like the Rangers in this series. I like the way they're so deep, and the goaltending has been outstanding, and their blue line is tremendous. Mm-hmm. But this is a different Capitals team, and we saw how they can shut things down in that series, play a physical punishing type of game. They're improved at the back end. Holtby's the real deal in goal. So I see this one as being a long series.
I see it being a real war. I mean, I'm a little prejudiced because of Nash and Brassard. I have to admit that. Sorry, you know.
I think I've never heard that before.
Yeah, no, don't bring it up that often. Yeah.
Who's 61 out there, Doug?
But anyway, I think the Rangers win it, but I agree with Scott. Washington are a different team, and they're a well-structured team. They're well-coached. I would give the coaching edge to, and I'm a Vigneault fan, giving the edge to Trotz in this series. I think he's going to make it a heck of a series.
He's had 10 tries, and he's got 3 playoff series victories. Except, but you still give it to Lane Vigneault?
You know, but
he's been in the Stanley Cup final twice?
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes you got to have some players. And I'm quite sorry to tell you that for about 8 of his years in Nashville, he didn't have a chance to win the series.
Yeah,
didn't have a goal scorer.
You know? No, they had a problem there, but they always had a goaltending factory in the backyard, it seemed, no matter, starting with Mike Dunham all the
defense
way.
Defense and goalies.
But, remarkable.
Hey, that defense of the New York Rangers and,
good. We'll
Stahl.
See what's up with Matt Zuccarello. That could be a factor on the right side for Rangers as well. All right, with that, we'll wrap things up. Thanks so much for joining us today on Hockey Central at Noon. On behalf of Doug McLean and Scott Morrison, Jeff Merrick signing off. We are back tomorrow at 12 for more Hockey Central at noon. Have a great day.